right energy is when you are doing something that is aligned to your values, when you are doing work that allows you to express your talents, your skills, and your gifts, then you have the right energy. If you go to a restaurant, for example, and the chef in that kitchen loves what he or she does, and they put that energy into the food that they create, you can feel that energy come through the presentation, the flavors, the way that plate of food is put together. But if someone is just doing it because they have to do it, then the experience is completely different. So the energy that you put into it, the right energy, is driven by the fact you are connected to the work that you are doing.
The idea of job security is outdated as a landline. If you haven't been in a search for a while, it's probable you will at some point. By choice or not. Most executives admit to staying way too long or sense what's coming and justify staying anyway. Here, there's another reason. The faulty belief that navigating to what's next will inevitably be worse and has to suck. Screw that. Lauren Greif has spent a lifetime in corporate and executive search, calling bullshit on stale career advice that most still use. This is Career Blast in a Half. The career podcast for executives ready to cut past outdated career advice to fuel your outcomes now. So let's go.
There's something that we've all got wrong. And what we got wrong is that time isn't our most precious asset. Energy is. And today's guest, Simon Alexander Ong, you can literally feel and be in his energy just from social media alone. I'm actually feel like pretty privileged because I'm in your energy in your home right now. Simon, I am so excited to have you here. Not only are you the best-selling author of Energized, but you've also been studying energy management for a long period of time. So welcome to the show, and please tell us, like, why energy? Like, there's a lot of coaching strains and areas, and people go from this area to that area. Why did you land on energy?
Sure. Well, first of all, Lauren, thank you so much for having me on the show. Really looking forward to this conversation. Now, the way I landed on energy, it's because I went through my life in a career. So my career was finance to begin with. Burnt out, stressed out, and just drained of energy. And what I came to realize through those experiences and after, when I left that industry to begin the path to what I now get to do today, is that if I didn't have the energy physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, I didn't have the foundation to accomplish some of my biggest goals. And when I looked at productivity, what I realized is that energy management, not time management, is the key to productivity. You can be time rich, but if you're energy poor, you are going to waste that time. You are going to procrastinate. And before you know it, all of that time you had available just disappears. But if you are energy rich, even if you are time poor, you will still get much more done than many will in the same period of time. And I not only noticed that in myself, but I also saw it in some of the most successful leaders and business owners that I came to have conversations with. I saw that when they had the right energy, they were able to not only influence other people, but also sell their ideas, their products and services. Because as one of them told me, people do not buy your ideas, products or services as much as they buy your energy. They are buying you. And what you come across as is delivered by your energy. It is this language that has no words, yet you and I can feel it. You walk into a room, some people give you energy, some people light up the room. And when others walk in a room, you can't wait to get out of it because they sap the room of its energy.
So there's, you talked about when they have the right energy. I'm using my little fingers, right? My air quotes. What's right energy? And I guess it begs the question, what's wrong energy? Just to put some level playing field here.
Sure. So right energy is when you are doing something that is aligned to your values, when you are doing work that allows you to express your talents, your skills, and your gifts, then you have the right energy because you bring a certain level of passion to whatever you do. It's like you can tell if somebody enjoys what they do by the results. So if you go to a restaurant, for example, and the chef in that kitchen loves what he or she does, and they put that energy into the food that they create, you can feel that energy come through the presentation, the flavors, the way that plate of food is put together. But if someone is just doing it because they have to do it, then the experience is completely different. So the energy that you put into it, the right energy, is driven by the fact you are connected to the work that you are doing. Now, when you go in with the wrong energy means there's a disconnection. You don't feel like this is what you are meant to be doing. And this can create itself through the physical manifestation of stress. And we might associate with that with a tension inside of our stomach. So it could be the fact that you are doing a job because you feel like you have to do it and you're doing it just to pay the bills. So when it gets to Sunday night or even Monday morning, you begin to feel this tension inside of you. And that tension is the physical manifestation of stress. It's your body saying, I don't think we are meant to do this. I don't think this is something that gives us energy. And so you can't show up with the right energy when you're not doing something that gives you joy.
I'm so glad that you tipped your hand to this topic of jobs and careers. Thank you for doing that. And the reason why I set you up is because that energy is transmuted, right? Mm. And one of the things that you talk about, and I think that this dovetails really, really well on top of that topic, is that your energy is arriving long before you are.
Yeah.
And for anybody who is networking, for anybody who is, and this is everyone, right? We're always networking or we're not working, you know? And so you talked about this, and I'm going to ask you to explain this even further because you say your energy introduces you before you speak. And it, emphasizing its silent and powerful presence in our interaction is a key to driving success. And so what I want to ask you is in a very tactical way to explain something that is very intangible. How is that showing up? Let's just say you and I have never met each other before. Maybe I've been to your LinkedIn. Maybe I've seen you someplace. Wink, wink. But where, how am I getting that vibe? That you're a person, not just who is energetic, but what does the energy signal to this person that would make me want more or you know, make a selection over all the people that so-called don't have energy? So how does this actually work?
Sure. So let's start with that phrase and break it down into what it actually means. So the phrase you mentioned is that energy introduces you before you even speak. Now, that term comes from the world of communication, and what it is trying to say is that your nonverbal communication tells people far more than what you say verbally. So you can get two people that say exactly the same message in terms of the words they use, but the nonverbal communication, i.e. your body language, your expressions, your use of hands, the way you hold yourself, that communicates far more than the words that you use to say to someone you're having a conversation with. So if you go into a meeting or a networking event and you are going into this excited about the possibility of connecting and meeting wonderful new people who you can learn from, but also share what you do with them that may help them in some way, then the way you carry yourself will be vastly different to if you go into that same event and say, oh, it's just another networking event and I'm not really sure I'm going to get anything out of it, but hey, there's free food here, so I might as well come along and see what I can get out of it. The way you carry yourself will be very different. And I think Maya Angelou summed this up the best when she said that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but they will never forget the way you made them feel. So what that is telling us is that through every interaction we have, whether it is a conversation, whether it is on social media, whether it is a meeting or an interview, we are transferring energy to the person in front of us. The question is, what sort of energy are you transferring? And it's something we can all relate to. I mean, if you think back to the last event you went to where there were strangers in a room and two strangers were coming up to you, I guarantee that something about one of them attracted you to start a conversation with them more than the other. But you can't explain it. You might just say to yourself, well, I was drawn to speak to this person. And then when we look back on it, we call it energy, vibes, charisma, magnetism, whatever word you want to use. It's difficult to describe exactly, but we just say we felt drawn to want to speak to them. And that is energy in motion. And the word we use to describe energy in motion is emotion. So when there is an emotional pull to want to communicate or start a conversation with someone, that is because it has triggered something in you through the transference of energy.
So now that we're talking about energy and we've put some stakes in the ground around it, now I want you to pole vault over this question, right? Let's see how this goes. So I'm going to play the role of an executive who's been in their job search for a long time. And I'm getting tired. I'm tired of interviewing, tired of networking. I'm tired of talking about myself. How do I manage my energy? And how can I use this energy, in your words, to, in many cases, outplay my experience?
Well, if somebody with that background came to me sharing some of the insights you just shared, Lauren, there would be a couple of things that I would want to know first, because it would help me understand their world and what would be most appropriate to explore. The first thing to understand would be, what is the reason they are looking for another job? So first of all, it's to get clear as to what is their desired outcome. Because lots of people go hunting for new jobs or new positions just because they hate where they are. And that's not a very healthy, or even let go. Or they're out of the market and they need a new position. But if we don't have clarity as to what is it we want, what is the purpose for our search? Then we could just be searching very wide, but not really with strategy and intention. And so what often happens in the job market is people will write a cover letter or an email to a hiring manager or to a team detailing their background and experience, but it's very vague. And they take the same message and copy it across 50 different companies. Now, doing that approach means nobody really gets to know the real you. And so it begins with understanding, what is your desired outcome? Once I have information on that, then it gives us some understanding as to the best approach to take. And the second is, when we think about the process, is the way we can make the process more enjoyable and energizing is to ask ourselves, what would make this more fun? What would make this process more fun? Because if we just do what we've always done, that can feel draining. It can make something feel like a chore. But if you attack the process from the point of view of gamifying it, then what happens is it becomes a bit more exciting. What can I do different? What would make this more fun in the process? So those would be the first two places I would start to understand what is important about the interview process for them. What are they looking to achieve? And then ask them how they could make that process more fun.
So I'm going to push back, because I'm a pushbacker. And, you know, you said, you know, so essentially customize these cover letters, right? And isn't that time expenditure? Isn't that draining? I mean, and to your to second point, right? So how could you make that fun? And so what would you say to the person who says, this isn't fun, right? Mm. I'm tired of doing this same old, same old. I don't know. I'm at the end of my rope here. It's been months and months and months. I don't see anything fun in this.
Mm. What I would say is that if it is draining, that is a sign that you've got to do something different. And I will share with you a real example, because how I landed my book deal with Penguin is because I didn't have an agent come to me. I didn't have a publisher come to me. I went out, just like people would in order to land a job. I went out and I connected with publishers out there. And I said to myself, which publishers would I love to work with to write my book? So I ended up writing down 7 publishers. Now, in the listener's case, it might be writing down 7 companies they would love to work with. And what I did is I went to each of these publishers' websites, and there was a part of their website where they shared a document telling you what are the upcoming new books being released in the next 6 months. And so I would write down the books that were being released. And then if they were having a launch event in the city I was living in, so I'm living in London, United Kingdom. So if they were coming to London as part of their book tour, I would then look to get to that event early, sit at the front or as close to the front as I could. So I could then network with not only the author and their team, but also the editors and the other people who worked at the publishing company. Now, what happened is I was then able to turn what was initially cold contacts to warm contacts. And so I connected with them on LinkedIn. I connected with them on social media. They started to follow my content. They started to see the value I was offering my followers. And it was a couple of months later, I would then send them an email, which was very specific because we had now met. We had exchanged a few messages. They had seen my content and say, hey, I've got a few ideas for a book. I would love to share them with you. And then I spoke about some of the books I had read by authors they had already worked with. So that's the specific part. But the reason I share that is because they responded not because of my content, but they responded because they knew me now. They had exposure to who I was. Imagine you are working in a company and an unknown person sends you a message on social media or an email saying, hey, when you next have a vacancy in your team, can you consider my CV? Chances are probably near zero that you would do so. But if somebody has come to an event that you've spoken at, they have sent you an email to add value. They've told you how much they enjoyed an interview you did about your work. Then by the time it gets to the point that they say, hey, if you happen to be hiring for a position in your company, I would love it and it'll be so, I would be so appreciative if you considered my CV, there's a much higher chance you would do so. And so that's what I did. And I didn't get replies from everyone. I got one reply from Penguin and they said to me, Simon, would you like to come to our offices to have a conversation? And at that moment, they were able to see and feel my energy. I just needed that opportunity for them to see who I was so I could present and tell them my story at their offices in front of their team. And so that shows you that the more specific you can get, the way that you can find fun in the journey and challenge yourself to be bold and to think different, what happens is you get their attention, you get awareness about who you are and arouse their curiosity.
So we're going to get specific right now. That was a great answer. And I really, really liked you bringing in your example because some of this is so transferable. Almost all of it, I should say, is so transferable, right? You dug deep, you aligned you found your seven publishers, you learned about them, you understood some specifics. You just didn't say, hey, I want a book deal. You got busy, you got off your butt, you went to these events, you were out there, you met people, you probably met a lot of people that you never would have met had you been doing this online or just staying in your quote unquote comfort cave. And then you went out, you did this, and the rest is a bestseller and so many more things to come, right? I mean, this didn't happen by accident. It happened through that experience of energy and action, I would argue as well, right?
Yeah.
So the specifics that I want to get into is, from your backstory and the birth of your recent child while you were writing this book, your energy was probably pretty tapped, right? Nothing like a baby to take away your sleep, right? And make you feel really drained for all the right reasons, right? For good reasons. So how did you restore, reinvigorate, refuel that tank? Because even when we feel like we are connected with our why or our value, sure. I mean, those things in our world are cost of entry. Because if you're looking for a quote unquote J-O-B, we don't want to work with you. No offense, but that's not what is not, it's just not where we are and it doesn't really work. So what do you do when you are literally tapped? I mean, you can't work out, you know, it's hard to function. And for some of us who are juggling young kids in the job search or many other life experiences, how do you get to that place where you can refill that tank?
Sure. You're right. When I had my first child, it was as the world went into its first lockdown in the pandemic years. And so it was juggling not only being a father for the first time, it was also having to write a book, adapt a business to what was a very strange moment in history, and also help out more in the family, because my wife had an operation, and so she had a number of weeks before she fully recovered. None of our family could come over because, of course, nobody could come into our homes. We couldn't go outside. And so all of these things had to be juggled. Now, what I realized from that experience is the way we can still refuel is to understand that your ability to adapt is what is key. And when you think about your ability to adapt, there will be some things that you can control and some things that you can't. And you have to be able to optimize for the things that you can. So to give an example, before having children, I can control my sleep time. I can decide when I go sleep. I can decide when I wake up. Now, when you become a parent, of course, that becomes something that is a little more outside of your control. Because if your child wakes up 3 or 4 times in the evening, you have to go in and make sure he or she is okay. You've got to reassure in your position as a parent. So that becomes something you control less. But then on the things you can control, you say to yourself, well, what can I optimize? So one of the things we did is we started to meal plan way ahead of time. We were planning our days the night before a lot more. We were blocking out times and we were saying no to a lot more things. And it just means you have to evolve as well. You know, before you become a parent, you might be able to say yes to a lot more things. But now you have to be stricter with your time. You have to really decide, is this something that I want to commit to? Is this thing a hell yes for me? If it's only a hell maybe, then maybe it should be a no. Because I only have these set number of hours in my day. I've got to ask myself, is this something worth my time? So you have to be stricter with how you spend your energy and time. And I actually found, Lauren, that I became more productive after being a parent than before being a parent. Because when you are not a parent, you don't have as many constraints. So you can spend all evening procrastinating about a decision or spending as long as you need to get something done because there are no other constraints. But the moment you start putting constraints, for example, your child needs your time, then you start to have a shorter window of opportunity. So with only, say, 6 hours in your day to get work done, you really have to ask yourself, what are, say, the 3 most important things I must get done within those 6 hours so I feel like I've had a productive day? So in a way, by adding constraints, you're forcing yourself to prioritize. So I think adaptability is key. And the second thing I would say is that consistency over intensity. So what I mean by this is a lot of people say, now I've had a child, I can't work out. I can't exercise. But for me, that's just an excuse. Of course, you might not be able to go to the gym for 1 hour every day now that you've had a child, but you can still do some exercise at home. You just have to change the setting. Maybe you don't have time for 1 hour workout, but maybe you still got time for 15 minutes workout. And instead of going to the gym to work with a personal trainer, you can watch a YouTube video and use that as your exercise guide. So again, it's thinking about how can you be consistent even though it might not be as intense as before, that consistency keeps your momentum going. And if it really means something to you, you will make the time.
Right. So when people say they don't have, you know, they're in a lousy job and they're miserable as AF, right? And then they go, well, I don't have time. But you're, what I agree with and what I think you're saying is, it's not that important to you right now. It's not that important to you right now. And that's, and that's okay. It's just don't fool yourself, because if it's really a burning desire, you are going to actually be able to generate a new kind of energy around that. This is a key element, right?
Yeah.
It's yours to have, but nobody's going to drag you. And hopefully you're not dragging yourself.
Indeed. And that's why it's so important to remind people that when you say you don't have time, what you are actually telling the world is that this is not important for me right now. This is not a priority. And if anybody doesn't believe that, just think back to the last time you said, I don't have time. And then somebody recommends you a Netflix show to watch, and suddenly you end up watching all of the episodes in that Netflix show. That shows you, if something is important to you, you will always find time for it.
So one of the counter pieces to energy is listening energy. So we've been talking a lot about output, exertion, effort. Talk to us about the antidote to that and your philosophy on listening and how those two things, seemingly not necessarily related, work in lockstep.
Well, for me, when I think about listening, Lauren, it is one of the most powerful leadership skills that you can develop, because you can't serve someone unless you know how to serve them. And the only way that you can serve someone is by understanding their world, what is important to them, what their challenges are, what would help them move up in their career. You only get that data through listening. You can only influence others through listening. And you can only really understand others through your ability to listen. And so if you look at the people that end up leading great companies or leading great teams, what they're really good at is listening, but not just listen to what someone's saying, but listen to really understand who they are. Because when you know how somebody receives information, what makes them tick, what makes them motivated, then it allows you to communicate better. And your ability, especially if you are in a position of leadership, your ability to communicate is one of the most important business skills that you can develop. And when you communicate with the right energy, people listen. And that is why when you look at organizations, the most important energy, when we talk about relationships, is between those at the top and everyone else in the organization. Because the people at the top model the energy that they want to see with the people they lead.
So I'm sure this has happened to you a million times, right? Either somebody isn't listening, or there's somebody that you may be coaching, or somebody that you are even on the stages that you have been on, that everyone else is, you know, doing the dance, they're feeling it, but there's that one or two people that are sitting there and they're kind of like low energy. Their vibe is low. I mean, I'm curious, do you leave them alone? Do you just, or is there some kind of call to action that can waken us to be able to tap into? Because I don't believe you just don't have energy. I mean, yes, of course it wanes, but it doesn't mean that you don't have it. It means that there could be something else that's there too, right? So I sit on a lot of calls and communities and networking calls, and I'll be honest with you, I want to jump through the Zoom call, take their shoulders and and shake them and say, girl or boy, guess what? Nobody wants to hire that. So yeah. I don't want to come in and being a sledgehammer. So this is a very selfish question. What do you say to somebody who is exhibiting a consistent level of low vibe and low energy? Or not?
So just so on the same page, Lauren, are you referencing if you are having a meeting and you are noticing somebody who keeps showing up with low energy, how to address that in that circumstance. Fantastic. I think it would come down to how I deliver a message. So what I've learned when it comes to communication is that if I tell you what to do, so I focus on the outcome and the message, that might not always be received by everyone in the same way. But if I can present a message through, and I notice in the background, you have a book called Story 10X. If I can present a message through story and I address it, if I'm only speaking to you. So often when we speak, we might say things such as many of us or we all know, but if I change my use of pronoun and focus on the singular, it can feel like I'm talking to you. Even though there might be 10 or 12 people in a room, I might say something like, chances are that in the last few days, you have felt depleted of energy. You are feeling exhausted. And I can resonate. We are going through a tough time right now, and you are not alone. But what I have noticed in my journey is that what can help bring us together, what can help energize us, are these three practices that have really helped me on my journey. And so it feels like I'm really talking to them, but I'm trying to communicate through the vehicle of story. And then when I get to the message, they're more ready to listen to it.
Mm. So I just want to flip this around. Now I'm interviewing, and the person who is interviewing me is like cardboard, right? I get all the, I can't tell you how many people really experience this. And a lot of hiring managers are also not great interviewers.
Yeah.
And so it feels awkward. And in the spirit of Chris Voss, where you are mirroring these energy fields, now here I am all excited about this role. My hiring manager is like, it's, you know, like watching paint dry. So how do I modulate, and should I match my energy so that I dumb it down or dilute it just because his or hers is?
If I was in that position where I'm in an interview and the hiring manager is low in energy, is like cardboard, what I would do is either, if I had the opportunity to ask a question, is I would focus the question on something positive, or I would find something for observing the room or listening to what he or she has said that we have in common and go down that route. So for example, if I have the opportunity to have a short conversation before the interview starts, and I notice immediately that they feel like they could be a cardboard character, they could have low energy, I might start by just saying something, oh, good to meet you. What has gone well for you this week so far? So what I've done is I've used the question to very subconsciously direct their mind to the things that have been positive in the last few days. And that can elevate their internal energy. Or I notice something in the room, or I notice something they're wearing, or they said in conversation that I can bring up. So it could be, for example, in the background, I see that they have a photo of a sports team. So let's say, for example, Manchester United, because that's a team I followed my whole life. So as we sit down, I might say, so I see you are a Manchester United supporter, huh? How's that been recently? And so what happens is, when you can find something to connect with, what happens is you tap into that person's joy. And when you tap into that person's joy, you bring them to life. And so those would be the two things I would focus on doing if that was happening to me.
All right. This is great. We're going to wrap this up with our three signature questions, because these, we get reach outs all the time. Oh, I have this post-it because I heard this on your episode. So I like it when our guests offer up what their post-it might be. What is something that either is a great way to telegraph, hey, you know, this field of energy is happening and now I want to tap into it. Is there either one that you use? Is there one you would recommend? So tell us what your post-it is, because I got my little stack here.
I would say my post-it would be a three-step exercise that will elevate your energy immediately, especially if you're going through a tough time right now.
Oh, bring it.
So the three steps that I would write on my post-it is, number one, write down the name of somebody I'm grateful for. So it might just be, okay, there's a name, write down the name, step one. Step two is write down why. Why did this person come to mind? So just write down a few details. And you want to be as specific as you can. So it could be, this person did this last week, really helped me. I was going through a tough time. I feel better. But if you can be specific, it really helps in terms of your emotional memory. Now, the third step is then write down the phone number of that person. Find the time to then call them. So it could be later today, after you've written these information down on a post-it note, you pick up the post-it note, call the person, and read to that person what you wrote down for step two. Now, if that step is a little too uncomfortable, what you want to do at a minimum is to send them a voice note. The key here is that they must be able to hear your voice, because your voice carries energy. If they only get a text message or an email, their mind has to make up the energy you sent it with. But if you read it out and they get to hear your voice, they're going to feel the energy that you're saying those words with.
Oh, I'm all over this. This is so good. This is so good. I love this. Simple, actionable, and a win-win for everyone. The next question is really about, where do you go to source from, either a publication, a book, an area to refuel that energy? I mean, obviously, I know you're also a big worker outer. I know that you like love good food. So those things are also contributing factors. But where are your resources, and where would you send our listeners? If I am somebody that wants to find out more and use the resources you've already curated to better understand this.
Aside from my book, the three things that you can seek out if you want to dive into this further is, number one, go to my website. There is a link there called Course, and that is a 30-day course that is delivered to your phone directly every single day. It's my voice that you will hear every single day for 30 days that will guide you to living with more energy. The second thing is to search for my name on YouTube, and you will see my YouTube channel, and there will be videos on there covering a variety of topics all linked with energy and how we can access that in every area of our life. And then the third is my newsletter. So when you go into my website, you will see a sign up for my newsletter. And every week I share not just my own insights, but also quotes that have impacted my life in a positive way.
Okay. This next question is probably the energy, like, of the Academy Awards of podcasts. I'm taking a big leap here. What is your walk-up song? So I know you're on stages. I don't know if you have the same one every time, if you have different ones, but what's the one that kicks your butt and like puts you into that state of high-vibing energy?
There's three that come to mind. The first is by a band called Odessa, and the track is called, I believe, La Ciudad. The second is a track by the Japanese guitarist Tomoyasu Hotei, and it's the track that he used for the film Kill Bill. So that's a really good track that I've used before to walk onto stage. And then the final one is by a band called Woodkid, and the track is called Run Boy Run.
I'm loving this.
I have to send you these tracks after, Lauren, so you can see why I enjoy them.
After we get off here, I'm going like right over to Apple Music and YouTube this. So everyone, thank you, dear listeners. Thank you so much for being here today. And of course, please, look for those links below. Simon's YouTube will be there, his social media, his access to his book. I mean, I wish we had access to all the reasons and things that he does on a daily basis, because I've done some research. This guy is no joke. And I know he works out. I know he eats well. I also know he doesn't like prawns. So make sure that you go check out those details. And If you are not already following, please just go ahead, follow, subscribe. And if you're feeling even more energetic, write an Apple Podcast review. So thank you so much. And Simon, thank you. Hang around for a couple of seconds and we're just going to let this load up and then we'll send you on your way.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
Thank you for joining today. We appreciate your listening ears, big time. We ask this, use these tools, not tomorrow, right now, and share them by spreading the love, leaving us a rating and subscribe so you don't miss the next career blast in a half. Most of all, thank you for you.